On the phone with me from the Summit County Planning Office, I have Community Development Director Pat Putt on the phone. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, Leslie.
So are you considered an essential service, and that means that you stay put in your office?
Well, I would hope we would be considered an essential service. In terms of what we're going to be doing in our offices, is we're going to be taking our cues from our leadership. It may already be known that the county manager and our director of health have issued declarations of emergencies. And I think it's a first step, and it's going to be a phased approach on not only how we work together as a community, but, you know, you mentioned the planning, the building and the engineering departments. How do we function? The short-term sort of plan for us, I can speak certainly for planning and building, is we're going to attempt to remain conducting business as close to what we have always been doing as possible. Some of the things we're going to be changing include, for starters, we do a lot of meetings with the public, property owners, builders, developers. We're going to be shifting to strongly encouraging doing those through e-meetings, conference calls, Skype, go-to meetings. A lot of these things can be handled through those sort of what I'd call technological platforms. Our building department for almost 2 years now have an online permitting process and system that doesn't require people to bring in their plans in order to have them reviewed. We do like a lot of other, I believe the city has the same sort of program. We have a planner on call at the front desk every day to deal with walk-ins. We're going to be transitioning into doing those again by telephone, email, and Skype if necessary. The idea is to limit the face-to-face contact with the public to the greatest degree possible, both for staff's health and safety and the public as well. In terms of meetings, we're going to be waiting to see, will there be further decisions from the county manager limiting things like planning commission meetings or board of adjustment meetings. Right now, those have not been canceled. The good news for staff and the public is, say, next week we don't have a Snyderville Basin Planning Commission scheduled, nor is there an Eastside Planning Commission. And we'll probably move into the upcoming weeks based on what the current conditions are with the virus in the community. So I think we have a good plan in place. You know, there's so much talk sometimes about, you know, local regional collaboration, and I think the response across the line, both from the county leadership and the city leadership, and being able to coordinate in conjunction with the Park City Hospital, if ever there's an example of level heads taking the right steps in a calm, careful, and science-based manner, we're seeing an example of it right now. And so I think that from the courthouse perspective, we're going to be able to get work done for the public without any undue, you know, pushbacks and timelines or schedules or anything, but we'll continue to monitor it on a week-by-week basis.
Okay, so either digitally or in person, have any new developments come into your office?
Nothing, what I would say, that rises to the level of bigger significant. You know, a number of plat amendments, adjustments to people's, you know, property, subdivision plat boundaries, low-impact permits, but nothing that would rise to the level of a big new project, you know, a big commercial project or a big residential project. Certainly, there's enough out there to manage right now, but nothing new in the past month.
Okay. So what's happened to Dakota Pacific and the revised plans there for the Park City Tech Park?
That project is certainly still out there. Where it is right now is we had asked after the last Planning Commission meeting prior to the holidays, we asked them to go back and clearly define what the residential component of that project was going to consist of. We knew the original application included a little over 1,100 residential units. I think it was 1,135. We weren't clear how many of those were going to be workforce housing. We weren't certain if there was going to be a component that was somewhere between the attainable and workforce, what that was. It was somewhat unclear as to the size of those units. So they have since gone back and took a reassessment of that project programming. We actually have a meeting with them, I believe, on Monday, early next week, and we're going to see if we, you know, if there's an update on that. It's really important. We didn't want to go back to the Planning Commission for a work session with them and the public without having this really nailed down and defined, because, you know, it touches on a number of key points of that project design. It's certainly neighborhood design, but it's also about, you know, neighborhood and the broader regional mobility, and what did those residential units mean in terms of traffic. Does it make traffic worse? Does it make it equal? Does it make it better? And without having that defined, we didn't think it was wise to move forward. I think we're moving forward. I think we're going to come back and hear some answers from them. I would expect we would be back in front of the Planning Commission, maybe not at the next Planning Commission, but the meeting following that. So a lot of work being done on the developer applicant side. We're waiting to hear the results of what those program refinements are, and we'll hear that as soon as next week.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the issues that were brought up a couple of weeks ago when Debbie Scoggin came to the county council saying that some of the big ranchette-type projects on Old Ranch Road are getting out of control. Have we defined this? I mean, can these properties rent out part of the space?
Well, you know, I was there when Debbie gave her presentation to the council and raised those issues. And it's not the first time that this particular topic, potential problem, has come up. The Planning Commission took a look at this in the late fall of last year as part of the code rewrites that we're doing in the basin. Is it out of control? It's probably a spectrum of opinion. I think what we're seeing here, Leslie, with this particular issue is sort of an outgrowth of the evolution of the lower density areas in the Snyderville Basin. And those areas, Old Ranch Road, Silver Creek, neighborhoods like that are zoned rural residential. And that rural residential zoning goes all the way back to 1977, when zoning was established in the county. And the rural residential zone was the Snyderville Basin's agricultural zone. And I think what part of the problem here is we are seeing that change over time, call it an evolution or an evolvement in this area, from true agricultural uses to more of a low-density suburban development use pattern. And as a result of that, you know, it pulls into question what is appropriate in terms of the size or the number of buildings that are on a property. You know, is it use? Is there, for example, and these are some of the things that Planning Commission wrestled with, you know, is it a use problem? Is there a difference between two buildings, each 20,000 square feet in size? One is a barn. Maybe the other one is a riding arena or indoor play facility. You know, we had a project approved, a couple projects approved in the last couple of years out in Silver Creek where these structures were over 20,000 square feet. One was, I think, an indoor soccer pitch, and the other one was an ice sheet. If the building looks generally the same, they're 20,000 square feet, is one a bigger impact than another? You know, the commission wrestled with that. is it simply a size issue? We do have processes in place now that have size thresholds. If it's the building, accessory buildings over 2,000 square feet, it goes through an administrative low-impact permit, which we could take to the Planning Commission if we saw there were potential issues with that. Is buildings over 10,000 square feet are a conditional use permit. We don't have a cap on that. I think that's probably something that we need to seriously consider, is that is the cap number. Is it an overall number of buildings on a building? You know, that's another one. In my office, I'm looking on my wall of a big photograph of my family farm. I grew up on a dairy farm that had a lot of acreage, but the developed part of it, the compound, had almost a dozen buildings on it. Is it a number of buildings? And see, these are the things that the Planning Commission wrestled with. Where we're at right now is we're going to be coming back here this late spring, summer, to have the broader conversation with the affected neighborhoods. I think the Planning Commission was smart, prudent, not to put a stake in the ground on this one and formulate an opinion, simply because they haven't had a chance to have a broader input opportunity with the community. I believe someone had made the mention, well, if we reduce the number of buildings out there, or maybe the size of the building, what about the impacts on outdoor storage? Does that mean that everybody who has, a boat, a trailer, an RV, or something that typically would want to be inside a building, they can't do that anymore? And so I think that they want to carefully weigh that out. There's a number of ways we could go about addressing that in the end if we felt that we need to. And I think in some instances we do. We may think about approaching this in terms of overall lot coverage. How much building area do you have as a percentage of your lot? We could potentially address it by the number of structures. I don't think that's necessarily probably the best way to go about it. And, the other, sort of bigger approach would be, asking the question, have we evolved to the point that we need to have perhaps an agricultural zone, a pure agricultural zone, and something else, a very low density residential zone? And I think these are going to be the things that we're going to be talking about. So Debbie's been consistent in reminding us about that. It's not that it hasn't been a priority. It's probably been a subordinate priority to some of the other projects and code updates that the commission's been working on. But we'll be revisiting this topic here pretty soon.
Okay, Pat, I need to leave it there. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks a lot, Leslie. Thanks for talking with me.
That's Community Development Director for Summit County, Pat Putt. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. KPCW News Time now, 8:28. Good morning. Well, with two new cases of COVID-19, the coronavirus, identified here in Summit County, local government working out a response for employees and residents. Joining us to talk about what Park City Municipal Corporation is doing, I have City Manager Matt Dias along with Park City Council Member Steve Joyce. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Matt, the city last night declared a local emergency. So what does that mean?
Well, it's twofold, actually. I think first and foremost, it shows our level of commitment and sort of solidarity with the Summit County Health Department and Summit County, Utah. So we really sort of did this together jointly, and I think it expresses our commitment to the severity of what's happening around us and, that we are really taking it seriously. But then secondarily, there's a technical component, which there are some additional enumerated powers that cities and towns can receive through contracting and purchasing that are just sort of technical levers that can be pulled. And then in addition, it puts us in line for funding should someday we need to be reimbursed by the federal government for any services or labor or expenses that are levied.
So what kind of funding options are we talking about?
So nothing currently, and that's what I've expressed to City Council, that there's nothing currently that I'm expressing a desire to be reimbursed on, or I need additional contracting or purchasing methods, but it's really a proactive measure. I may get there, and this may be a prolonged incident, and so we really wanted to work with the county, work with the health department, and do this together.
So can you give me some examples of how that money would be spent?
Sure. So for example, in another jurisdiction that I'd worked in, we had a water scare, and we had to go to another state and purchase all sorts of pallets of bottled water. And so we made an emergency purchase that we weren't able to go through a logistical procurement process, an RFP. And so there may be components to an emergency plan. There may be resources I need to allocate to other jurisdictions, perhaps. And then when you declare a state of emergency, you're able to get in line for being reimbursed for those types of activities later. Now, to put people's kind of fears at ease, this is just really a proactive measure out of an abundance of caution.
Well, and that was kind of my next question, is that if we want people to remain calm and not panic, why declare an emergency?
If you think about this, it's similar to what you see when like a hurricane comes or an earthquake happens. A lot of times there's funding sources available for things like small business loans and stuff where, you know, it impacts the small businesses in a town and their opportunities for them to go back and apply for grants to basically bridge to health again. If you haven't declared an emergency, you're not eligible for those kind of opportunities. So this is one where it's not just for the city and what the city can do, but it's also, you know, all sorts of effects for the businesses and the people that live here in town.
All right. The city has released a plan for its employees and community members. We've heard the standard wash your hands and stay home if you're sick response for prevention. What additional measures is the city taking to that?
Well, I think the most important part is we are very concerned about our workforce and the community. And so I think we have immediately enacted sort of a new policy, a 60-day temporary relief of any sick leave or any use of sick leave. So as most organizations, we have several different types of employees, salaried employees, hourly employees, and some of those employees are benefited, and some of them are not. And so we immediately wanted to enact a policy to make sure that if people are sick or feeling ill, and perhaps they don't have sick leave or they don't have those types of benefits, that we create a policy for them that they can stay home or they can care for a loved one. So the last thing that we would want to do is have policies in place that would create an incentive for someone to come in when they're not feeling well or for someone to not self-quarantine when they think they maybe should self-quarantine. So that was sort of the immediate response is sort of an immediate 60-day proviso, a much more kind of caring methodology in our sick leave policy. But we've also implemented a task force, which is basically standing up our emergency operations center. We've implemented more aggressive approaches to working from home. And then, as most folks saw yesterday in the media, we've relieved some of the activities within our municipal facilities. So we're trying to follow the guidelines of the state and the governor's office. Our municipal facilities are still open for business, but we're trying to reduce the opportunities for friction within those facilities. So canceling some sort of favorite classes that we have, whether they're spin classes or exercise classes. You know, my son's Lego time was canceled. So if we can create less friction in our facilities, but keep them open and keep in line with the guidance that we're getting with the state, we think that's responsible at this point.
So the Mark stays open, but you're on your own in terms of just using the equipment. The library's open.
That's correct. And so each of our facilities on their website now has information available about what has been postponed and what types of activities will remain.
So in terms of the employees, I mean, are you seeing anybody sick? Are you seeing people take advantage of the 60-day relief?
I haven't actually received a request for use of this policy yet. However, you know, like we have several hundred employees, so at any given time we have additional employees out on sick leave or caring for a loved one. But our hope is that this is something that people will use ahead of time. Further, though, it is available on our website. And to the extent that other people are interested in the policy and what it means and maybe how they could use it for their own workforce, that's something that's important to us, too, is that we can encourage other entities, big businesses or small businesses, to perhaps be more sensitive to these temporary needs and temporary accommodations that our workforce may require.
Yeah, so, I mean, just thinking about protecting the taxpayer here, I mean, are we requiring then doctor's notices, or are we just on the good of, you know, good of their word?
Both. So all of the above, and I guess it depends on the situation. But so the policy is available on our website, and it requires both. So there will be circumstances for prolonged absence where we require a doctor's note. But right now, we are erring on the side of caution, that we want to motivate people to make good choices, to make the right choices. And I'll go one step further. We've found that when you treat employees with that type of respect and dignity and show that you care about them, the ultimate output is they end up working harder for you, working harder for the community, and that's something that's really important to us.
Okay. The city also announced that city offices are open for essential services. So rather than telling us what those are, maybe just tell us what's closed if you were to walk into the MARSEC building. Or the water department.
So nothing is currently closed. So the municipal facilities and municipal operations are still underway. However, the types of activities within our municipal facilities that we're creating, gatherings or groups, have been canceled. So by way of some concrete examples, there are library program. There's programming at the ice rink. There's programming at the MARC, where there are either classes or groups or functions. And those functions can be both public and private. It may be a city-sponsored story time at the library. Or it may be an ice hockey league, a men's and women's ice hockey league, which is really a private function. But within our facilities, we're trying to reduce the amount of friction and gatherings within our facilities. And that's, you know, under the proviso of the Summit County Health Department at this point, that we continue to operate our facilities, but we reduce the friction within them.
And does the city have a team dedicated to responding to an emergency and being headed up by Mike McComb?
Yeah, we've actually, in fact, we've got a meeting at 9:30 this morning. So representatives from different areas, Mike is certainly one of them. Michelle Downard has been a part of it, the communications team, Matt, myself. And so we're meeting fairly frequently right now, because one of the interesting things is this is just changing so fast that whatever the rule was yesterday, it's probably going to be different tomorrow.
So we've already seen, again, two cases of people testing positive for the virus in Summit County. Travelers, of which we have many here, how is the city communicating to second homeowners or those who are visiting? I mean, what message do you send them? Stay home?
Well, that's a tough one. Actually, what we've been doing is communicating a lot of the same things that you would see that we're passing to our local businesses. It's the information that we get from the Summit County Health Department. It's the things that you should be doing to be safe. We haven't been telling anybody, you know, go back to where you came from or anything like that, but we are communicating through the Lodging Association, the Chamber, the Restaurant Association, and so we've got nice channels, the Historic Park City Alliance, so we've got nice distribution channels for information set up that get us out to many, many thousands of people who either live here, work here. We were using things like I think there's about 1,000 people who subscribe to the city newsletter that comes out. So we've been pumping information into that. We're using Facebook. We're using Twitter. I mean, we're basically hitting everything we can and trying to do that on a steady stream.
You know, and I had gotten an email from somebody saying that she had heard that Argentina is not allowing workers here on visas to return to their country due to the virus. I don't know. I can't verify that. What do we do for folks like that? I mean, can we help them?
Well, that's obviously a very complex question. And Leslie, last night I'd heard sort of the same, I don't want to call it a rumor, but I'm speculating because I haven't seen the report myself. But we do have a component of our task force working with several stakeholders that are thinking about sort of phase two. So right now we're going through all the sort of machinations of the technical elements of responding to an emergency and beginning to prepare. But part of our task force is working with the Park City Community Foundation, the Christian Center, the resorts, and other stakeholders that are thinking about phase two. If there's people, you know, if we experience a prolonged amount of closures, if school gets closed, what happens if people need food or they need shelter? And so there is a component of our stakeholder task force that is already thinking about phase two. And so I don't have a perfect answer for you on that yet. I just think we're lucky to have capable stakeholders that are engaged. People have thought of creating a relief fund. I know there's some discussions happening in that regard. So, for instance, on Monday or Tuesday, Steve and Nan Worrell on City Council and several members from the county actually had to cancel the senior lunch that day, but they were there to hand out box lunch, greet people, and let them know how to get information moving forward. So we are thinking about those things.
Yeah, I had seen some creative ideas as well to kind of help those most vulnerable, something like a Google spreadsheet that we saw that was done after the fires in California. Is that the city's job, or do we leave that to kind of our community organizations?
I think it's going to be everybody pitching in together, and so I think there's going to be enough work. We're going to carve it up and find, you know, the best fit for everything. You know, we talk about keep Park City Park City and how it's a special community, and I think this is really going to be an interesting opportunity for us to really show it or not. If you think about it, it's not just the hunker down and wash your hands kind of thing, but you know, once we really get into this. You know, if you're healthy and you're going to the grocery store, you know, is the person down the street from you in quarantine or self-quarantine? Can you pick something up for them? The old guy down the street who maybe he's one of the vulnerable people and he's been told to truly stay in, you know how lonely that would get? It's like, well, pick up the phone, go for a visit, you know, stay 6 feet apart, but go for a visit, you know, send an email. There's just going to be so many things. I've heard a great example for the local businesses of, if you don't feel comfortable going to the restaurants, go buy a gift certificate. You know, keep the money for the local businesses flowing. And sure enough, you can use that gift certificate in July when this is gone, hopefully. But I think there's going to be so many good ideas coming out and hopefully people really starting to execute on that, because this is going to be a real opportunity to prove what a community is about.
Yeah, and it's, of course, still ski season for some of us, our favorite part of the ski season. The resorts, of course, huge draws. How's the city working then with the resorts to prevent spread? Or are we?
We are proactively. So we're in touch with both Park City Mountain and Deer Valley Resort, and the Chamber of Commerce has kind of been central to this as well. And clearly, I think the Chamber is sort of leading the business enterprise of our proactive emergency response. But they, much like us, have come up with additional accommodations for their employees. They are trying to incentivize employees that are not well or feeling sick to stay home and not give them the impression that they need to come in and work. I believe that they're giving them programming that if they need to care for a sick or loved one, that they're willing to accommodate for that. And then secondarily, I can't speak to their operations, but I've heard, just like us, they are following more rigorous standards for food preparation and beverage services. They're following more rigorous regulations for sanitation in terms of bathrooms and restrooms and public spaces. And we're doing the same thing. We have lots of public spaces. We're following new Environmental Protection Agency procedures and Center for Disease Control cleaning procedures and all of our facilities and all of our buses. And so we've been passing along information mutually. Sometimes they'll receive a good tidbit and sometimes we'll receive a good tidbit, and we're working with the county and the health department and these kind of bigger businesses that are the draws, as you say.
What are we doing with our bus drivers, given that they probably see more people per day than any other city employee?
Business as usual, but they have been sort of brought up to speed and given additional training on their own cleanliness, their own sanitary, and then we have a far more rigorous cleaning program of the facilities, whether it is one of our transit centers or whether it's actually one of our transit buses. The transit system is part of a kind of global trade association. It's called APTA, and APTA has come out with some additional regulations, and so we're following those strictly.
All right. And then, Steve, what's the city council's role in all this? I mean, do we crack open the budget to set aside money if the situation should get worse?
Yeah, I certainly think that's one piece of it. In fact, we ran into one yesterday just talking about things that our normal rules for meetings are that we have to have a quorum on site for any city council meeting. And it's like, well, what if we start getting sick and how do we keep doing business? So we're actually looking at making a change to that so that we can do business remotely and keep the council working. But it's going to be an interesting time because there's legislative requirements for the upcoming budget. I mean, we have to have a budget, and it's like until the state gives some relief or something, there's a lot of work that has to go on both from our city staff and from city council. But right now, I think we're just trying to really, you hear a lot of the program staff is driving a lot of it, but, you know, we're certainly trying to be involved with the chamber, with these different trade organizations and, or you know, things like the health department and the hospital.
Yeah. In terms of budget impact, so are we kind of planning ahead as well, given that, you know, the ski season is the largest revenue generator for town?
Yeah, I think we are, I hate to say this, but I think we were just blessed almost by the timing of this, that by the time it really starts to have an impact, we're almost at the end. We're at the tail piece. There's still, you know, normally March has a couple of good more weeks, but I mean, as an example, we were talking the other day about Moab. It's like, boy, they've got their marathon and Jeep Week and all these things coming up. They're hitting their season. We're ending our season. So I'm much less concerned about what we have from a, you know, a tax revenue impact or anything like that, and more about what are we going to have to do to put programs in place like we did for, you know, additional benefits for hourly workers that wouldn't have normally had sick leave and things like that. That can add up pretty significantly.
Yeah. So where should we direct Park City residents for more information?
Well, I think first and foremost, we are directing people to the Summit County website. Summit County's health department is filled with certified public health officials. And so I think as a starting point, that's the best kind of global place to look for information. There's all sorts of links to the governor's office, to the lieutenant governor. But on our local website, Park City, I believe it's parkcity.org/COVID-19, there is also a wealth of information there. We're providing links to the Center for Disease Control and all sorts of other places if people have questions or concerns, as well as if there's other businesses in town that are interested in what we're doing and our internal policies and sort of some of the provisions of the Declaration of an Emergency or some of the provisions that we put in place for hourly employees. So twofold. Summit County website is, I would say, the first place that people should go, but if they're interested in more of the details about Park City Municipal, we also have those available.
Okay. Anything else either of you would like to mention?
Just ask for everybody's cooperation. This is going to be an interesting next couple of weeks, months.
Okay. Steve Joyce, Matt Dias, thanks for your time
this
morning. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. It's 8:46. Park City's Leadership's annual community lecture for Monday has been canceled. Leadership founder Miles Radiman was scheduled to speak with the CEO of Alterra Mountain Company, Rusty Gregory. Miles joins me now on the phone with an update. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So because this is a city-sponsored event, it had to be canceled because you're in a city building?
Well, I think that's part of it. But, of course, as you were just going through the list of everything that's being canceled, it sounds like it was a great snow day, you know, where we close everything down. But I guess the buzzword nowadays is the abundance of caution. And you never know if we're overreacting, you know, out of fear or if we're really doing all the right things. I guess we're trying to do the right things and making sure that we don't spread. All the experts are telling us this is the way to go. And I think that's what we have to listen to. So, yeah, we last year when we had the community lecture, we overpacked the Santee Auditorium. So we had at least 400 people there last year. And there's no way that as a community leadership program that we want to spread this virus around any more than it's already spreading. So, yeah, we did cancel it, and we are in a city building, yes.
Yeah. So last year's lecture, of course, you featured Vail Resort CEO Rob Katz, so you figured it was Alterra's term to bring in CEO Rusty Gregory?
Yeah, you know, every year in this lecture, I try to bring in somebody has some impact on our community or has something to say that's not normally said. And so, even when I brought in Rob Katz, my idea was to invite, you know, Alterra to come the following year. So I think it's important. I mean, we're sort of at ground zero of the future of the ski industry since we have both large companies represented here. And they do business in a slightly different way. And I wanted to hear what Rusty had to say about how they can contrast their business models and what they're doing.
Yeah, a big difference between the two, though. Vail Resorts, of course, a publicly traded company, and they have to do certain announcements. There has to be some transparency there based on SEC regulations. Alterra, however, privately funded, so we only know what they want to tell us.
Yeah, that's true, although, you know, I haven't found them to be terribly secretive. I think they'll tell you, you know, they seem to tell you anything if you ask them. And, you know, that's why I wanted Rusty to come here and just answer questions and talk about the business model, what they see as the future. And I don't know Rusty. I mean, I did meet him 30-some years ago when he was working for the owner at that time of Mammoth Mountain, who was Dave McCoy. Dave McCoy just died recently at 104. So Dave was one of the founders, and I like to think of sort of my generation and Rusty's generation is the transitional generation. We didn't found anything, but we knew a lot of the people who did, who were the titans or the founders of the ski industry in our country. So, and I know that Rusty kind of grew up, in a sense, through the industry, starting as a lifty and a maintenance guy and a ski instructor and everything else. before kind of partially owning Mammoth Mountain and then working with Altera. So I think his perspective would be pretty interesting.
Yeah. And have you heard? I mean, you follow the ski industry pretty carefully. I had heard that there was one East Coast ski resort that's called it quits for the year. What are you hearing out there in the biz?
Well, I think they're faced the same situation that all the ski all the big sporting teams are facing, and so forth. Steve Joyce just mentioned, and it's true that we're somewhat fortunate, if you call that fortunate, that we're at the tail end of our season here, even though we are going to close late this year. But they're faced with the idea too that they attract crowds, and this whole idea of not traveling and sort of stay in place. I mean, it's kind of the antithesis of community. Everything that I've devoted my career to, and I think the city has too, is to bring people together. And now we're asking people to kind of atomize and kind of hunker down. And I think that's necessary. I'm not, casting any dispersions on that, but, it's a real about face for us because we are in the tourism business, welcoming the world. And now we're, as you can see from our national policies, we're telling the world that they're not welcome. And everything I hear from the tourism industry, not just the ski industry, I heard this morning on NPR, that sort of 50 million jobs are at stake now worldwide as the slowdown in tourism, because when the airlines, start laying off and the cruise ships and ski resorts and all the sporting teams, this will ripple through the economy. I mean, none of us are going to escape the impacts of this.
Yeah, but locally, you haven't heard whether or not we stay open till Easter, April 12th.
I haven't heard that. No, I think, they're all grappling with it and looking at their exposure and what they think. And luckily, skiing is a little bit more, it's a lot more dispersed, than like, 5,000 people or 20,000 people going to an auditorium. So, I mean, you already have with the social distance in a way. In fact, I get pissed off when I ski and there's no social distance and somebody's in my face. So I think, it's a different situation. But, they have to determine that on their own. I haven't heard anything about that now.
All right. So you do hope to bring back Rusty Gregory. We just don't know when at this point.
Yeah, we talked to his office and he even said, I didn't talk to him directly. I talked to his chief of staff, Charles Christensen, and they were lovely to us. And they said, listen, we understand what's going on. We're in the middle of it too. They said, but if you hold it, he's showing up.
Great.
So it wasn't like they said, no, he's not coming. They said, he'll come. So we said, and you heard Matt and Steve just now saying that, abundance of caution. I guess that's the key word now. I think I'll make some T-shirts with that.
So will your group still be meeting? Because that's the day that they usually select their
class. No, we're not going to meet.
Okay.
No, we even called off the class. But that's the very same reason. I think the city is really being cautious. We don't want to contribute in any way so that anyone can, say, well, you guys should have called off stuff. You really weren't taking this seriously. We are taking it seriously. I've been banned from the city hall because they let me know in no uncertain terms that I'm the exact age range that, they say is most vulnerable. And the truth is I am the most vulnerable. And so they said, can you stay away from the city hall, which is difficult for me to do. But
what I wanted to get to, the fact is that this is the date that usually the class project is selected. So when does that happen?
Yeah, every year. We're, like everyone else, we're kind of in a wait-and-see mode now. Some of the suggestions have been that we can do it online and all, but the beauty of our leadership program is people gathering together. That's what creating community and discussing these things face-to-face. I've really stayed away from the idea that we're kind of one tweet away from, building community. That's not what we do. We're really a face-to-face group. So we have a wait-and-see attitude now. And, in the grand scheme of things, what we do is really insignificant. I mean, I'm proud of the program and all, but when you see all the things going on now, we're just going to play our part and be good citizens. So we've just, called everything off to a date uncertain. I think in the next, you can see day by day, things change dramatically. As a matter of fact, Steve Joyce had talked to me, I think, or emailed me a couple of days ago, and he said, is this still on? And I said, yeah, it's still on. were doing it. And he said, I don't think it's a good idea. I disagreed with him. And then yesterday, everyone in the whole world was closing down. And Matt said, we're canceling everything. And I think he's right. But
okay,
you know, maybe by 2 weeks from now, things have gotten better.
I only have about 10 seconds. So the city tour, is that also on hold then?
Well, no, the city tour, again, is not till September. So, you know, I'm planning that and working with where we're going and so forth. So okay. I'm hoping that things have calmed down by then.
Okay. Miles, thanks. That's Miles Radiman, founder of Leadership Park City. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW.